This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. There was a mass mobilization this past Saturday, November 4th, in Washington, D.C., and in cities around the U.S. and world to demand an immediate ceasefire in Israel's war on Gaza, a war that has killed an estimated 10,000 people and counting. As opponents of the war grow in number, more than 5,000 Black activists, artists, scholars, students, and over 150 organizations have signed a statement of Black solidarity with Gaza. They include such luminaries as Angela Davis, India Moore, Mark Lamont Hill, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Robin D.G. Kelly, and more. And among the organizers of the statement is my guest, Corey Peterson-Smith. Corey is the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He writes about U.S. empire, the war on terror, solidarity with Palestine, and anti-racism in the U.S. He's a contributor to In These Times, The Nation, Truth Out, and Common Dreams. And his latest op-ed in Yes Magazine is called The Roots of Black Palestinian Solidarity. Welcome to the program, Corey.
Thank you, Sonali. I'm grateful to be here.
Why is there this connection, if you will, between Black Americans and Palestinians? In your story for Yes, you write that it can be traced pretty far back to the late, to the mid to late 60s.
That's right. I mean, really what you have in this country is an ongoing Black freedom struggle that started from the very, very beginnings when the founders of this place called the United States introduced enslaved Africans. That kind of moment of oppression was also a moment of resistance. And ever since, there has been a freedom struggle to try to get free. And in Palestine, you know, when the founders of the Israeli project found that project through violence against Palestinian people, through the forced expulsion, through terrorizing, through just unreal levels of violence that continues to this day, there began a Palestinian freedom struggle, or that was a beginning of a freedom struggle in Palestine that also continues. And so we've seen across history these convergences. And on one hand, the forces that keep us down here in the United States, they're in collusion with the forces, Israeli forces that keep Palestinians down. You know, U.S. police departments train with Israeli forces. So they're working together. But it's also the case that our freedom struggles converge too, that we find each other. And that has happened throughout history. And this is just another moment, another chapter in that long and proud history of mutual solidarity for mutual freedom for Black folks and for Palestinians.
This is not the first statement in solidarity with Palestinians, right? Tell me about it. I believe it was 2015 when you helped to organize a statement in solidarity with the people of Gaza, with Palestinians in general.
That's right. And that project actually began in 2014. You know, we published it in 2015, but the origins really lie in the fateful summer of 2014, which was when, among other things, Mike Brown was murdered by police in Ferguson, Missouri. And Ferguson rose up. We had the Ferguson uprising. And that coincided with the latest Israeli bombardment of Gaza in 2014. And so that was this moment of horror and violence, but also resistance and solidarity as Black folks rose up in Ferguson and Palestinians in Palestine sent messages of solidarity, sent statements of solidarity, and sent suggestions on social media about how to deal with tear gas and things like that. And so there were Palestinian folks in the streets of Ferguson marching with Black folks, you know, against police violence. And so that was a moment of connection. And the year that followed was one in which there were delegations, number of delegations of folks from this country to Palestine, but in particular of Black activists going to Palestine and making connections. And so a year later in 2015, we issued a solidarity statement from Black folks here to Palestinians.
And so when we think about how there are these commonalities in struggle, This is a, you know, it's kind of strange when you look at it from the perspective of pro-Israelis who, you know, have a different perspective, right? And it really matters who's telling the story and who's telling the history. There was an instance or there was a time when there was some black solidarity with Zionism, and you know, you even see folks calling attention to or trying to find parallels between the indigenous land back movement and Zionism. But how is that undermined by the facts of the occupation today, when you have a country that has as many weapons as Israel does and is controlling all the borders, to then say it is the one that is the victim?
So, first of all, you know, if we're talking about struggles for self-determination, which, yeah, there's a pro-Israel argument that Israelis are simply they're simply expressing their self-determination. A few years ago, they actually passed a law called the Nation State Law that said that only the Jewish nation has the right to self-determination in that place that they call Israel. And yeah, I mean, there's so many, I think, pretty straightforward problems with this, including, as you say, it's pretty clear that Israel is occupying Palestinian land with checkpoints, with, you know, an army, a navy, an air force, none of which Palestinians have. There's no Palestinian checkpoints that control the movement of Jewish Israelis. There's no Palestinian navy. There's no Palestinian tank corps, or air force, et cetera, et cetera. But the other thing is, when you look at the history of self-determination, when you look at that time in the 1960s, the 50s and 60s, you know, a high point of decolonization and national liberation struggles around the world, where was Israel? Was Israel on the side of the decolonizing countries in Africa and Asia and Latin America? No, Palestinians were actually. Palestinians were in alignment with those decolonization struggles. And actually, Israel was lined up with the United States, with South Africa, with European powers, the colonial powers, et cetera. So it's pretty clear where they stand. But I think the question you asked is extremely important about why has there been this effort by the pro-Israel folks to try to make a connection with the Black freedom struggle, or try to present an alignment with the Black freedom struggle, or claim that Israelis are actually expressing, you know, an indigenous political project. And the fact is that those two things, the Black freedom struggle and the struggle for indigenous liberation, are struggles that have faced centuries of oppression and also have a lot of moral authority. Like, we recognize the incredible importance of the Black freedom struggle, of the abolitionist struggle, you know, in terms of being a force, a moral force, and a force for political progress in the history of this country. The civil rights and Black power struggles, how important they were in terms of driving a whole era of freedom struggles, right? And similarly, all the ongoing incredible resistance of indigenous peoples have been a reminder of the violent reality, the violent foundations of this place called the United States, and actually the fact that freedom and democracy have yet to manifest, particularly for the people who were here first, before the United States, and the people who were enslaved to provide a foundation for the US economy and US society, right? And so it's that moral authority of the Black freedom struggle and of the indigenous struggles that Israel, they want some of that. They want some of that cachet. They want to say, oh, yeah, we were, you know, Martin Luther King was with us, or we're just, you know, we're just indigenous peoples. They're trying to claim to be part of that kind of decolonization and history, and definitely the contemporary reality. What they're doing in Gaza makes it very clear that they are really the opposite. These are the forces of colonization and oppression, not freedom.
Let's talk about the massive march that took place over the weekend. I mean, there have been ongoing protests since Israel began its latest bombing of Gaza. But the one that took place on Saturday, some consider the largest gathering on U.S. soil of a solidarity march with Palestinians or pro-Palestinian solidarity march. What does that represent to you in terms of the tide of public opinion?
Yeah, this represents a breakthrough, and it's been a long time coming. I mean, you know, before this latest episode of Israeli bombardment of Gaza, of horrific violence, for years prior, there has been a building identification, sympathy, and solidarity with Palestinians in this country. The widespread success of Students for Justice in Palestine, which means that if you have gone to college in the past decade, you have encountered activists who are asserting Palestinian humanity. The success of the BDS movement, which is led by Palestinians and has invited people all around the world to find their way in their communities, you know, on their campuses, in their neighborhoods, in their cities, with their retirement funds, et cetera, to divest from Israeli apartheid, to boycott the companies that are part of our lives that also buttress Israeli apartheid. These things have been incredibly successful, and it means that a conversation around Palestinian rights has been very widespread. And I think that things like the Movement for Black Lives, which has, again, forced people in this country to confront institutionalized racism here and how deep it goes, the fact that it is rooted in histories of slavery and colonization, people have learned a lot, actually, over these years watching and participating in those struggles in the streets here, and then look over at Palestine with new eyes and say, oh, wait, maybe this isn't that complicated, actually. Maybe this, too, is a racial justice struggle or a liberation struggle. And there are some things, of course, that one has to learn that are specific to Palestine, and also some things about this that are familiar. And so all of this was in the background prior to this latest round of violence. And in particular, younger people and people of color and Democrats have tended to sympathize with and be in solidarity with Palestinians. And so we are seeing, in the midst of this absolute horror that Israel is committing, again, Israel is revealing itself, and it is revealing its whole project to many, many people. The fact that they have cut off electricity and fuel and water and food to Palestinians in Gaza, the fact that they are bombing schools and mosques and hospitals, all of this combined with a kind of background that many people have where we are more open to seeing Palestinian humanity and standing with Palestinians in their humanity, that is all culminating in this outpouring of solidarity that we're seeing. And in particular, yes, the largest march for Palestinian rights in U.S. history.
How out of step is the Biden administration on public sentiment? I mean, former President Barack Obama has come out and said what is happening to Palestinians is, quote unquote, unbearable. I mean, you know, he, of course, spoke as most former presidents would in equating Israeli and Palestinian suffering. And on an individual level, that is certainly true, but on a mass scale and on a state level, there's a huge disparity. But Obama said what is happening to Palestinians is unbearable, which is a far cry from what Biden has said. You know, basically, Biden has said that if it's the last thing he does, Israel will have Israel's back down to killing the last Palestinian. I mean, he's all but said such a thing.
Right. And to answer your question, the Biden administration is severely out of step. It's out of step with, I mean, certainly the world, which people all around the world are demanding a ceasefire, right? And we've seen votes in the UN Security Council, we've seen votes in the UN General Assembly, where it's the United States that in Security Council vetoes a ceasefire resolution. It's the United States that in the General Assembly opposes a ceasefire resolution. But The Biden administration, the White House are out of step with their own population. I mean, polls show consistent majorities of people in this country want a ceasefire. And that is certainly true for Democrats, for the party that Biden supposedly represents. Clear majorities want a ceasefire. So, in the face of that, we see Biden and his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, defending Israel's violation of international law, Israel's human rights violations, and actually not only opposing a ceasefire, but actually sending more weapons to Israel as it commits these violations. So it is really out of step. It's very evident that it's on the people of this country to force a ceasefire to happen.
And I'm wondering if you think that this is going to have an impact in a year. We're almost exactly a year out from the next election, and we're seeing troubling polls for Biden. Even some Democrats are now reportedly behind the scenes calling on Biden to perhaps even reconsider being the nominee for the party. In swing states, he is in trouble, especially among communities of color, especially among Arab Americans, which is unsurprising given the unequivocal support for Israel in its war on Gaza. I mean, could this in what is was already going to be a close election, which is kind of shocking given Trump, but could the US's unequivocal backing of Israel be the straw that breaks the camel's back, if you will?
Yeah, I mean that, and that's certainly the conversation. It's evident that the Biden administration has a problem, that this policy is unpopular, actually, of supporting Israel and its just genocidal acts in Gaza. And so it's really actually pretty historic. Like, it's never been the case in US history that a foreign policy question, as far as I can tell, that a foreign policy question that does not involve a US invasion or US, Americans directly in harm's way, but rather something else, in particular Palestinians being killed, that is actually a factor in a US election. It really represents a kind of incredible shift in the political situation here in the US. And it means that the Palestine movement has something that we are not used to having, which is power. We're used to being on the margins of US politics, and now we find ourselves with political power. And the question is, how do we wield that to make a ceasefire happen?
About the website for the Black for Palestine organization, which is what actually put out the statement, and where Black Americans who might be listening can go and sign their names to the statement if they wish.
Absolutely. People can go to blackforpalestine.com, the word for blackforpalestine.com. We have our statement there. We have resources up, so please check us out.
Thank you again, Corey. Really appreciate your time.
Grateful to be here, Sonali. Thank you.
My guest has been Corey Peterson-Smith, the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He writes about U.S. empire, the war on terror, solidarity with Palestine, and anti-racism in the United States. And his latest op-ed in Yes Magazine is called The Roots of Black Palestinian Solidarity. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, the racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.